Welcome back to another episode of Talkin' Moto. Pittsburgh recap this week is what we got on deck. And we got almost exactly what I wanted in the 250 class. And we got what I predicted in the 450 class. So, feeling kind of good right now. So we're going to start it off here with 250 qualifying. And before I get to the results and how that shook out, Tom Vielle had a very, very big crash. I wasn't watching qualifying live. I saw it on X here. And it looks like, rewatching it right now, he comes up short on a triple and his front wheel hits the face of the jump he was trying to land on, and that just started throwing him over the bars. He took off on the next jump, went almost a full front flip, smacked his head pretty solid on the downside of another jump, and then kind of tumbled out of it onto a tough block a little bit. So that tough block might have helped out everything besides his head and maybe his knees. Helped out his back a little bit, not slamming right on the ground. Tom Vielle said he hit his head pretty hard, which he did. And besides that, he said he felt pretty good. Obviously, I guess his head was good enough to race. No concussion or anything like that. So that's good to hear. And yeah, was able to continue on with the rest of the regularly scheduled program. And so now getting into more of the qualifying here, RJ Hampshire qualified first with a 48.507. And big shout out to Racer X. We now have, at least 250 wise as of now, we have the intervals once again for the qualifying results and the gap in between everybody to first place. Seth Hamaker qualified second with a 49.013, half a second behind RJ. So two of the top title guys qualifying one and two. And the third championship guy qualified fourth, Tom Vielle, with a 49.574. So a half a second off of Seth Hamaker and a full second behind RJ Hampshire. The one man splitting those three up was Max Volin, who was running a 49.499. So he's a big fan of the fours and nines, I guess. As we know, Max Volin running a very new and innovative rear brake controlled by his hand and not his foot like a typical dirt bike is with everybody else that I know of. I've never seen anybody do it, especially I know nobody's done it at the professional level. I don't know if maybe some people who... I don't know how to word it the correct way, but I've seen people ride dirt bikes who don't have feeling in their legs, I guess might be the best way to put it. I'm sure they have something rigged up for them to use hand brakes and whatnot with their rear brakes rigged up to use their hands as. That just put my brain in an absolute pretzel right there. That was a disaster. But we move forward. Max Volin, he was feeling it. He said it's been there during the week, and now this week it decided to show up on a Saturday. So big shout out to Max Volin, starting his day and night off very, very good, qualifying third overall. And splitting up the three big guns in this 250 East class. So we'll get into 250 heat number one, and we had Seth Hamaker in this, who, once again, kind of another hometown race. I don't know if Bainbridge, Pennsylvania is closer to Philly or Pittsburgh, but I know they were calling Philly his hometown race, so I don't know if it's the same in Pittsburgh. Looking at a map, we are closer to Philly than Pittsburgh. So yeah, Philly probably more of his typical hometown race, but still can't be too far for old Seth Hamaker. He had a great jump, grabbed the hole shot, and he was in that split lane. He was absolutely flying. It seemed like the going outside to inside was much, much faster for him. And it seemed like he was able to just make up a lot of ground. Seemed like that was going to be the fast line the entire night. We saw that switch around a little bit in the 450 heat race. I mean, not even a little bit, kind of a lot of bit in the 450 heat races with one man in particular, but we'll get to that later, obviously. So yeah, he was absolutely flying out there. A little bit boring of a heat race. He did go on to win, and Tom Viel finished in fourth. He was 13.2 seconds back, and I thought Tom Viel is out of this championship, especially with how East Rutherford ended for him and his heat race. He was 12 seconds back in the end. Main event, he was a distant third as well. So I thought there was a good chance we will, after Salt Lake, we will not see Tom Viel with another one on his number plate. But, hey, things changed a little bit for him. So overall, in this 250 heat number one, Seth Hamaker finished number one, with Chance Hymus right behind him, who had his breakout ride in Foxborough, the big mud race where he got his first career win. Nate Thrasher coming back a little bit, showing a little bit of some fight. He said his hand is starting to get a lot better, feel a lot better during the week. So that's good to see. Throw another guy who won a race this year, getting a little bit more in the mix and up where he belongs a little bit there. I just said a little bit, way too much. I said a little bit too much, a little bit. Tom Viel, fourth, and Cullen Park rounds out your top five. And what? Where was it? Oh, it's main event. Had too many things running through my head at once there, like always. 250 heat number two was much better of the two heat races. A little bit more entertaining, a little bit more battling going on. RJ Hampshire, he is the only, we're doing little air quotes here, only contender in this particular heat race, with Seth Hamaker and Tom Viel being in heat race number one. RJ Hampshire, the only air bunny, air quote, contender in his heat race. So honestly, I was expecting him to go out there, grab the whole shot, and not necessarily run away with it, especially with being the fastest qualifier. I was expecting him to kind of control it a little bit more than what happened. He did go out, he grabbed the hole shot, but he messed up the big rhythm where Max Volin was able to make a pass on him by going 3-3-2. I can't remember exactly off the top of my head the sequence that RJ Hampshire went. I think he had to go, I think it was like more of a 2-2-2-1. Do those numbers add up? 2-4-6-7. I don't know. But yeah, he messed up the big rhythm. Max Volin was able to get around him. Once again, like I said, Max Volin, he mentioned it in the post-race press conference that he's been feeling it during the week, and now it was finally able to come out on a race day, so he showed it. He was a little spicy in his heat race, but he did make a mistake in the whoops and was able to jump on the table after RJ Hampshire. While talking, I was reading my notes and figured out exactly what they meant. After the whoops, RJ Hampshire was going double, and then he was, I don't know, the whole tabletop double single conversation. He was jumping the face of the tabletop over the backside of the next jump. Consider it whatever you want. I think it might, we'll call it a double. Tabletop is a single. So he was then doubling out, and Volin was able to jump triple, I guess you might want to call it, onto the table and then off over the next jump. He did it three times in front of RJ Hampshire before RJ Hampshire was able to do it himself, and he did it on the perfect lap where Max Volin made a little mistake in the whoops and didn't have the speed to jump all the way onto the tabletop. Hampshire was able to capitalize on that and take away the win in this heat race from Max Volin, who finished second. And Austin Faulkner, another guy the last couple weeks who maybe has started to figure out the Triumph bike a little bit more than what he was dealing with in the beginning of the season. I know all his surgeries, both like limbs and brain, all that, I'm sure, hindered him a little bit in the beginning of the season, but it seems like he has started to figure it out a little bit more here as of late and show a little bit more speed. Once again, we're stuck on the little bit part. He was able to show some more speed the last couple weeks and kept that up in the heat race with getting a third. And yeah, I think that will not even just about do it. That will do it here for the 250 heat races overall. And boy, oh boy, do we have a great main event to talk about surrounding one, well, not totally surrounding one man, but one guy, man, human being, put on one of the best, maybe championship-saving rides that we might have ever seen in recent history. We'll call it recent history because I don't know every single main event that has ever happened in this sport, but that's what we'll call it. So starting off the 250 main event, Nate Thrasher grabbed the hole shot. Vial was in second. RJ Hampshire was in fifth. And Seth Hamaker did not get a good jump whatsoever. He said after the race, he just spun a little bit. He said he even spun on the grate, which is kind of unusual with it being, it was a dry night, surprisingly. Also lucked out with no rain happening. So it was a dry night. So typically you don't hear about guys spinning on the grate if there's no rain or anything. you'll hear it. They'll spin. They'll get off the grate. They'll spin on the little plastic monster logo or Thor logo, whatever it is, on the gate and the actual gate itself, and then maybe spin a little bit in the rut. But he said he spun on the grate. So a little unusual. Got a bad jump. Was in 18th place. Then he had someone cross jump him. Made one of the craziest saves of the entire season. And of course, I can't seem to find it posted because it was not posted. Going over a tabletop, someone kind of cross-jumped him, made a crazy save, and then about minute and a half later, so about another lap and some change later, he almost got landed on, and he was very, very lucky because he had the cross-jump situation. He had the almost get landing on situation. And with 10 minutes to go, if the race ended with 10 minutes to go, so if it was a half, it was a half race, you know, screw it, we're calling it half race because the exact situation that Takenmoto wants to happen looks like it's happening, call the race. There would have been a three-way tie in the championship, which is exactly what I said last week that I wanted. I wanted a three-way tie in this championship. Go down, Salt Lake City, winner take all between three guys. A legitimate winner take all between three guys. Now, we're still kind of close to that, but it's not quite winner take all between three because there's a situation where one winner can happen, blah, blah, blah. We'll get to that later when we get to the points, but I almost had exactly what I wanted. There was a point where Nate Thrasher in first, Tom Vielle in second, Max Voland in third. And like I said, in his heat race, Max Voland, he was feeling a little spicy. He was pushing Vielle big time. I think he was pushing. There's some Ralph Shaheen. If anybody out there remembers old Ralph Shaheen from Speed Network, who used to call the races, he with Jeff Emig, he used to always say, "Yeah, these two guys are battling. Excuse me, they're gonna slow each other up, and so and so is gonna catch them, or they're gonna lose the gap to this guy." And old Jeff Emig would always say, "Well, I don't know, Ralph. A lot of the times it'll push him forward and make him go faster." That is exactly what Max Voland did to Tom Vielle. He was pushing him, made him go faster, and he was able to catch Nate Thrasher because of it. And then Hampshire decided to join the party. In the split lane, he went outside inside, like I was talking about with Hamaker, really making that work in the heat race. That's what he did to get past Volin. And with 4 minutes left, Nate Thrasher was still skimming the whoops, which is absolutely insane. And there will be plenty of whoop talk and big takeaways, 450s. 450 big takeaways. There will be plenty of whoop talk this week, which it seems like is almost every week, which I am perfectly okay with because whoops are Supercross, and I think they should play a big part in Supercross. But it did seem like Tom Vielle was a little bit faster when he was jumping the whoops, opposed to Nate Thrasher skimming the whoops. And I'm not super surprised because you look at who is coaching Tom Vielle. It's Marvin Musquin. He was typically a jumper. I'm not going to throw a stereotype out there, but usually it has seemed like Europeans, Frenchmen, they're Europeans. It's the same difference. Are typically all jumpers. Well, jump heavy guys. And Tom Vielle last year got his win at Daytona. A little bit of a mixed track, no whoops. Goes out the next week, wins in Birmingham, Alabama. Rain forced the track crew to take the whoops out. So you might be able to say, hey, Tom Vielle is a no-whoop supercross rider. This week, we had whoops. And played out in Tom Vielle's favor. So I mentioned RJ Hampshire getting past Max Volin. RJ Hampshire, then he kind of RJ Hampshired, hit a tough block, just leaked a little bit too far, hits a tough block, goes down, but he got up very, very fast. Max Volin was able to capitalize on the situation, though, and was able to get past RJ Hampshire for third place overall. Kind of got a little stuck on my words there. He was able to capitalize, get third place overall for his first career podium. We will get a little bit more into that later. And with 1 minute left, Tom Vielle made a pass on, I think, my favorite turn of the entire season, because it reminded me of old MX versus ATV Unleashed video games when I was growing up as a kid. It seemed like they always had elevated turns for supercross tracks. You'd always jump onto the turn, do the turn, then jump off. So I don't know if it was a nostalgia type of thing, but when I saw that turn, because I didn't recognize that it was an elevated turn on the track map, so when I saw that turn, I got very excited for solely that reason. And Tom Vielle went inside on Nate Thrasher to make that turn, or make that pass on my favorite turn, and then he was able to go inside on the next turn to really make it stick and go on to win his first race of the year. So now we have 7 winners this year. Seth Hamaker fought all the way up to 5th place after being at one point in 18th place, almost getting cross-jumped, almost going down, almost getting landed on. He had a couple sketchy moments in the whoops as well. So Seth Hamaker, absolute insane job to get up to 5th. But. Pittsburgh was all about Tom Vielle coming in 7 points down and now leaving with the points lead, a 1-point lead over Seth Hamaker. RJ Hampshire down 3 points, who finished 4th overall. Nate Thrasher finished 2nd overall. And like I mentioned, Max Volin getting his first career podium. Big, big shout out to Max Volin doing it with the double handbrake situation he's got going on there. Man, that it was, I think it might have been the race of the year. I know I said race of the year a lot last year. I don't think I've said it as much this year, but I think this 250 Pittsburgh main event might be the race of the season. I think it's a perfect time now to jump into some of the big takeaways, and then maybe not so some of the big takeaways, but still very cool things. Well, very cool things in my mind that happened in Pittsburgh for this 250 class and leading in to Salt Lake City. So the biggest big takeaway we have for this class is obviously the championship standings. We got now Tom Viel back in the lead, up by one on Seth Hamaker and up by three on RJ Hampshire. So it basically becomes a winner-take-all situation. RJ Hampshire goes out there, wins in Salt Lake City. Tom Viel comes in second. They tie on wins. RJ Hampshire gets the tiebreaker due to the... Or they tie on points. Excuse me, I might have just said they tie on wins. They tie on points. RJ Hampshire gets the tiebreaker due to having two wins in that situation. Seth Hamaker goes out there. If he wins, he's only down by one, so it doesn't matter what happens with Tom Viel. No tiebreaker situation there if Hamaker is able to go out and just win. And then Tom Viel, obviously, same thing. Going in with the points lead, it is only one, so you need to win. If you don't win, you at least need to beat Seth Hamaker and RJ Hampshire. Worst case scenario, there three of them are battling back in 10th to 15th area, where it's only single position or single point difference in between those positions back there. That's worst case scenario for Tom Viel, but he can kind of use that in his in his favor, I guess, by losing to RJ Hampshire by one position, but then he's only down two. He's got to beat Seth Hamaker still. So I just kind of talked myself into a little bit of a circle there. But that's okay, because that is nothing new. What else do we got here? Max Volin got his first career podium. And one thing I thought was really cool in the press conference was, I can't remember exactly who asked the question, but someone asked Tom Viel and Nate Thrasher how they think they would do with using a rear hand brake and not the typical foot brake. And you could just see the smile come across Max Volin's face when they were answering it, and they were saying how hard they imagine it is, especially with like riding your entire life using a rear foot brake like a normal dirt bike would be. So I thought that was really cool that that reporter did that. Once again, I can't quite remember their name or who they work for, but what else we got? Tom Viel finally gets his win and makes it seven winners this season in the 250 East class. Absolutely insane. That's never been done before. So it's just the parity is the word I was looking for. Because there's still other guys in this class who you honestly kind of would think could win some races. There's Chance Hymus got his. Now kind of thinking about it, I think it's really just like Austin Faulkner might be the last caliber guy to be able to win a race in this class. Maybe the way Cullen Park was riding the last couple weeks, you might think he might have an outside chance at it, but who knows? Max Volin now threw his hat in the ring for making it a surprise appearance on the top step of the podium in Salt Lake City. I think that will wrap our 250 East talk up here, and we will now get into the 450s, where we got a little bit of momentum switch going on. So, starting with qualifying, as always, first, coming into this race, Sexton was down 9, needed to win the last 3 after winning the past 2 to cut that lead down from 15 to 9. So, was Chase Sexton able to do it? He started off hot, qualifying fastest with a 47.276, and Cooper Webb had a 47.710. And I shouted out Racer X in the 250 qualifying for having the intervals up there. They got it for the 450s too. So Cooper Webb, 0.4 slower than Chase Sexton. Now I don't have to do math. Malcolm Stewart qualified 3rd with a 47.726. And Ken Roczen, he looked the healthiest he's looked since the break couple weeks ago, where he hurt his ankle and his shoulder, qualifying 4th with a 47.926. And Justin Cooper rounds out the top 5 in qualifying. Another guy who seems like he might be turning it around a little bit. Kind of bashed him the last couple shows because honestly he kind of deserved it, but it seems like he's might be finding it a little bit more lately. Dylan Ferrandis qualifying 8th, and old Dean Wilson rounding out the top 10 in qualifying here for the big 450s. Heat race number 1. Mitchell Oldenburg grabbed the hole shot on his beta. I'm pretty sure it's beta, but I've heard some people call it beta. Might just be a, what is it, England accent type of deal. But he goes out, grabs the hole shot. Ken Roczen was able to get into the lead fairly quickly. And Cooper Webb was in 3rd place off the start. And I mentioned him earlier, rounding out the top 10 in qualifying. Dean Wilson starting to kind of come around a little bit and starting to make it look like he might be a little more full-time rider type of deal. He's rounding into shape. He got his top 10. He got his first top 10 last week, and he was riding pretty good in his heat race. Cooper Webb, he knows it's championship time. Everyone knows it's championship time. He had the pressure on Ken Roczen all race long, it seemed like. As soon as Roczen got to the lead, it seemed like Cooper Webb was able to make his way into 2nd and just really keep the pressure on him big time there. Ken Roczen didn't crack. We know Ken Roczen's really good at his first couple lap sprint speed type of situations. So heat races lend himself good. I don't think I said that right now that I think about it. But heat races, good, shorter. It's good for Ken Roczen. And, he was able to hold off Cooper Webb the entire race to take the heat win in number 1, with Cooper Webb in 2nd, Ferrandis in 3rd, who I mentioned in qualifying. Kind of maybe starting to come around a little bit. Just a too little, too late type of situation for Dylan Ferrandis this season, like it seemed to have been the past couple years in Supercross. Dean Wilson qualified 4th out of the heat race, and just like last week, we had all 3 of the factory Suzuki rides in one heat race. And once again, just like last week, all three qualified straight into the main event. Nothing very important about it. Just kind of cool in my mind. Heat race number two. I noticed to start this one, it seemed like they held the gate for a pretty long time. Aaron Plessinger, though, was able to get a hole shot. Sexton was in fifth. And this is where we started to see a little bit more action in that split lane, where I thought the way Hamaker was doing it, going outside inside, seemed very fast. Justin Cooper had a line that he used on Chase Sexton here, where he went inside and then he went kind of high up on the berm on the outside, cut down, and just came out of that turn and section with a whole lot of speed, was able to get inside and then just kind of drift his way over and take away the line of Chase Sexton going into the big rhythm. And then it was either the very next lap or two laps later, he was able to pull the exact same move off on Aaron Plessinger to get to the lead. And Chase Sexton, he struggled in this heat race. He became, just like his teammate, Tom Vielle in the 250s, who became a distant fourth, Chase Sexton became a distant third. It seemed like pretty fast. Justin Cooper almost had the Cooper Webb situation go on again there. Justin Cooper started going in through the whoops. He would go 2, 3, 4, and that would give him enough speed with jumping through to get up onto the tabletop. And he was able to drop Aaron Plessinger a little bit after pulling that big line out in the whoop section and go off and get a heat race win with Plessinger in second. Like I mentioned, Sexton kind of a distant third. And then Malcolm Stewart and Joey Savacci round out our top five in heat race number two here. Jumping now to points paying situation. Like I mentioned, coming in, Chase Sexton was 9 points down to Cooper Webb, needed to control his own destiny, needed to win out, and Cooper Webb needed a win to stop this momentum that Sexton had, who he's coming in with two in a row, Sexton that is. So, time to race the main event here. So Cooper Webb was able to grab the hole shot. One thing, we'll get back to the race in a second, but one thing that really irritates me is they shoot the start from where it's like the riders coming towards you, which is awesome. But then main events, they shoot off giant fireballs that cover absolutely everything. So you can't see anything until the giant fireball goes away. And it takes away, like this week, it took away the entire start straight and you couldn't see anything for about a second. But Cooper Webb was able to grab the hole shot, sneak up the inside, kind of squeeze Chase Sexton a little bit. Sexton had to slow up not to run into the back of Cooper Webb. Aaron Plessinger in second, but going through the big rhythm, he wasn't able to triple, so he had to double, and Sexton and Webb were able to hit the triple in the beginning of the rhythm section, so that put Sexton in second place, right behind his right title rival here. And it was go time. Were we going to see the same type of thing we saw in East Rutherford, where it was them 2-1-2 for the first couple laps, very close to each other, or was Cooper Webb going to be able to run away like what happened in East Rutherford to him? He was not able to run away to that extent. So Cooper Webb, or Justin Cooper, excuse me, pulled out the same 2-3-4 line in the whoops, able to get past Aaron Plessinger in the same situation that he was able to kind of drop Aaron Plessinger in his heat race, used it to get past him in the main event, and then Justin Cooper put his sights on Ken Roczen, who he was all over him after that long rhythm, and then he rolled. All over him, and then after the long rhythm, he was able to do the whole inside-outside type of dealio there and get past him into third place. And Chase Sexton was skimming the whoops for the first 8 minutes, and then after minute 12 minutes left, Sexton switched to jumping the whoops, which he said after skimming them just took too much energy. It was too difficult for him to do it every lap of this main event. And then on his second trip through jumping the whoops, he had a very close call where he came up short on one of them. I can't remember if it was Justin Thomas who said it, but he seemed to think that Chase Sexton was going through the whoops in too high of a gear, and so he wasn't getting enough drive. So he wasn't switching up his gear after deciding to jump. When skimming them, you need to be up in higher gears. Jumping them, you got to be down in a lower gear, going a little slower. And so he changed up to jumping, came up a little short, and that threw him off the side of the track. And he was very, very cautious when he went off to the side of the track because he's on plywood. There was a little bit of rain during the week, and so they weren't the driest pieces of plywood. But he did not go down. He did end up losing, I think it was about 2 seconds from that situation. But then he was able to catch Cooper Webb throughout the rest of the track, and they got deep into lappers where it was going through the whoops. Dean Wilson was on the far right side, so the outside of the whoop section, and that just happened to be where Chase Sexton was going through. Nothing really Dean Wilson could do about it. Wasn't like in, I think it was Arlington a couple years ago, 2019 maybe, where he was just in front of Ken Roczen and just not moving for multiple sections. Not the same situation whatsoever for Dean Wilson here. He was just stuck, wrong place, wrong time, and Cooper Webb was able to get a little bit more of a gap from that. It was later in the race, and then Sexton tried to push it a little more, and you could see he had just too many little minor mistakes that would cost him half a second, if that, but they added up, and he just wasn't able to get back onto Cooper Webb in a spot where he could go for a pass. And so Cooper Webb did end up stopping the momentum of Chase Sexton and getting a win finally here, extending his points lead. Sexton did come in second place, and Justin Cooper, he was feeling it in the heat race. He was feeling it in the heat race. He felt it in the main event and got himself, I think it was his second podium after about 4 or 5 different fourth places. Yes, second podium. First one came in Indy. He also had a fourth in Tampa, a fourth in Arlington, a fourth in Daytona, and a fourth in East Rutherford. So this would have been his fifth fourth place ride on the season. He is fourth in points, so consistent all the way around. Nothing like, it didn't seem like there was anything super, super crazy about this main event. Just the fact that they, I don't know, just too many big takeaway time. Because this will go into the big takeaways. So we're now in big takeaway time here for the 450 main event. Too many little minor mistakes here by Chase Sexton, which might end up costing him pretty big here when it gets down to the last round in Salt Lake City. Points paying time, well, championship paying time, might cost him just a little bit too much. But one notable thing, they put 16 seconds on Justin Cooper. And so that just goes to show how these two are just absolutely flying right now, especially this race. Last week it was Chase Sexton absolutely flying. This week it was Cooper Webb flying with Chase Sexton very, very close behind him in terms of time-wise. One big thing, well, another big thing, I guess I should say, was the fact that the whoops became jumpers. I think that killed Chase Sexton. He seemed like he had a plan of coming in and jumping the whoops the entire main event, but he said he had to switch, or skimming the whoops the entire main event, but he had to switch to jumping after skimming took too much energy out of him. Fumbled in my brain. That is definitely one of the big reasons I think Cooper Webb won, because if they were skimmers, Sexton would have been able to set up a pass. And he said, didn't seem like Cooper Webb was losing too much time jumping through the whoops, but if they stay skimmers or skimmable, blitzable, whatever term you want to use, if they stay like that long enough, then Sexton would definitely be able to eat into that lead a little bit more, and maybe Cooper Webb would crack. He didn't crack. He was under pressure all race, and Cooper Webb just did not crack at all. So that's another big takeaway, is the fact that Cooper Webb, he's done this two times before. He's won this championship two different times, going for his third. He understands pressure, one of the best under pressure. Just very difficult, obviously, to make him crack under that pressure. So now taking a look here at the 450 standings, Cooper Webb is up on Chase Sexton by 12. So now Chase Sexton's going to need a little bit of help in these last two rounds. He's going to have to go out and win. You'd have to assume both of them. He definitely cannot finish behind Cooper Webb. And he's going to hope Cooper Webb has a little bit of an off night where he's down third. Best case scenario for Chase Sexton, Cooper Webb's off the podium, out of the top five, and really tighten that gap up big time going into Salt Lake City. One other thing that's pretty interesting about the points, there's a battle for fourth in points between Justin Cooper and Malcolm Stewart. Malcolm Stewart obviously got his first career win back in his hometown race in Tampa, but he is down 4 points to Justin Cooper for fourth place. So that's going to be real cool to see, because you know there's definitely some good money, bonus money on the line for that fourth place in points. And Ken Roczen's just kind of hanging out by himself there in third place. Can't really move up unless something crazy happens, unless we have two DNFs by one of the top two guys. and can't really move back unless the same situation happens to him, unless he has a couple DNFs or 1 or 2 point nights. So Ken Roczen just kind of hanging out all by himself in third place in the points. Now let's take a look into Denver, where we have the 250 West coming into play once again. Hayden Deegan up 17 on his teammate Cole Davies. Interesting to see if Julien Bomer's shoulder is doing better and how that will impact him. And Joe Shimoda with his broken fingies. How are them suckers feeling now that they've had almost a month off here? So, going to be exciting for the Denver round. Of course, there's no Eli Tomac going back home situation, which last time he announced he's racing motocross right before Denver, he got hurt and wasn't able to do full seasons. But now he will be back, ideally, for a full season in pro motocross. Looking at the track, very similar start. Long start with a sweeping left-hand turn into a little rhythm section, then a 180 to then, correct. And a double finish line cross over the start a couple of separate times. Where are the whoops at? Oh, there looks like there's a, right off the very first turn, the first jump, it looks like there's going to be two different levels. Inside looks like it's going to be a little bit higher than the outside, so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out and if it affects where guys are going to be starting. And then what else did I want to talk about? Oh, there's a section after the longest rhythm section on the track where it looks like you might be able to go double, triple, and then single onto tabletop, and then the last three jumps in this section and the first three jumps after the 180 right-hand bull corner on the track map, they are built absolutely identical. So it's going to be interesting to see if we got a little wheel tap situation to get over that middle one, or how they're going to play it. And then back across the start, and they're not going to be able to come into the whoop section with a whole lot of speed because it is right after a corner. And then there's a situation kind of like it was this past week where it was into a corner or right out of a corner. And then looks like you can go maybe, I'm assuming it's going to be double, triple out into the next corner. And then on, off, back onto the start straight. So I think it's going to be a very fun and interesting race. I'm going to assume, making some picks here, I'm going to guess Hayden Deegan's probably going to win. It's either him or Cole Davies, one of them two. Julien Bomer is too banged up. Joe Shimoda, maybe too banged up. Also, I don't think he's fast enough. So 250s are done. 450s, I'm hoping, just like I was hoping for the 250s in Pittsburgh, I'm hoping Chase Sexton goes out, wins, and then Cooper Webb finishes low enough down where we got two red plates going into Salt Lake City, winner take all between them. That's just what I'm hoping for, and I can definitely envision Sexton winning. It's probably going to be a little more hard-packed. He excelled a little bit more at that in the beginning of the season than Cooper Webb. Cooper Webb kind of started off a little slow, but he did get his first win of the year in Glendale, I do believe it was. So that is a hard pack track. No, not Glendale. What the? He got second in Glendale. Okay. So, and that was a triple crown, that Chase Sexton did end up winning. So I think this track and dirt will lend itself better to Chase Sexton than it will Cooper Webb. So that's why he's my pick. He's also my pick just because I want to see chaos going into the final round of this series. And that would just be a whole lot of fun. So yeah, that will wrap us up here for Pittsburgh episode of Talking Moto. Talking underscore Moto on X. Go get a follow, like, retweet, all that fun stuff. Give it a share. And we will be back to hopefully be talking about a tied points lead in the 450s heading into the last round. If not, I'll still be excited, but maybe slightly less excited at that point. So, Talking underscore Moto on X. Go give it a follow, like I said, and we will be back next week. See ya!